My name is Charles Biblazer, managing editor of The Media Line, and today my guest is Mr. Aaron David Miller, vice president and Middle East program director at the Washington-based Wilson Center and a former advisor to Republican and Democratic secretaries of state. Thank you very much for being with me today, Mr. Miller.
Pleasure.
The topic we'll be discussing, Mike Pompeo's visit to Israel and the announcement that President Trump will host Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House 2 weeks prior to the Israeli elections. Let's start with Pompeo. The focus yesterday during his press conference with Netanyahu on Iran, seemingly an issue the two countries see eye to eye on. How do you see things progressing?
I think that in large part, Secretary of State Pompeo's visit, which could have been conducted a month ago or a month from now, and it's rare for a Secretary of State to visit Israel so close to elections, it is really the first part, in my view, of a two-part campaign effort on the part of the Trump administration to do everything they can within reason to boost Mr. Netanyahu's domestic stock in what could prove to be a very difficult and close election. It's not unusual for American administrations to play favorites in Israeli politics. I can point to at least three examples, once under a Republican president, George H.W. Bush, and two under the Clinton administration, where I personally witnessed an effort on this behalf. So what Mr. Trump is doing is not unusual. It's just he's doing it with a pretty intense focus on boosting Mr. Netanyahu's prospects. It's not that it's news that somehow Israel and the United States see eye to eye on withdrawing from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action and imposing tougher sanctions on Iran and making an effort, although I think it's a half-hearted one on the U.S.'s part, to roll back or constrain or contain Iranian influence in the region. But clearly, if you watch the presser yesterday, both Mr. Netanyahu's and Secretary of State Pompeo's statements, it was a veritable campaign commercial on Mr. Pompeo's part. He pushed all of the necessary buttons. He identified Purim, which obviously is a holiday whose storyline is an attempt to destroy the Jewish people. He openly referenced Iran's intentions to destroy Israel in the context of that Purim trope. He talked about visiting the embassy. He referred to the close bond that exists between the U.S. and Israel. And all of this might have been standard operating procedure, but in the context of the election on April 9 and the reality that this is only part one of a two-part campaign effort, which we're going to witness this coming Monday when Prime Minister Netanyahu meets with President Trump at the White House, suggests to me that it's clear who the Trump administration would like to see reelected.
And in terms of a potential boost for Netanyahu, is Israeli media reported yesterday, citing U.S. officials, that there's a possibility of a potential declaration recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. In your view, would it be wise to do so?
You know, I do see it as a possibility. I think it's been foreshadowed in Lindsey Graham's visit some weeks ago, and his call for recognizing the reality that the Israelis have controlled Golan and must continue to control it. You see it in the adjustment of language in the Human Rights Report, in which the State Department substituted Israeli controlled for Israeli occupied. And there's a lot of backgrounding on the possibility that the administration would issue such a statement. And I think the reality here is that the prospects of Israel returning to the Golan Heights right now or for the foreseeable future is slim to none. It's just in the context of what is coming, which presumably is Mr. Kushner's plan to resolve the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians, the need to galvanize Arab state support for that plan, the whole notion that negotiations should avoid unilateral actions which prejudge or prejudice the outcome of any negotiation. The unilateral declaration will be seen, frankly, for what it is, an effort, pretty transparent, to change U.S. policy with the specific view or purpose of boosting Mr. Netanyahu's electoral prospects. I don't see that kind of behavior as reflecting sound, wise, or prudent U.S. policy. the fact remains that, and you can only wonder, I've written about this a year or two ago, of what would have happened had the Israelis or our efforts during the 90s to facilitate Israeli-Syrian negotiations led to success, and the Assad regime would have regained control of the Golan Heights, even in a negotiated settlement in the context of a peace agreement. What would have happened? The challenge to the Syrian regime in the spring of 2011, which succeeded in triggering a Syrian civil war, the intervention of the Russians, a growing Iranian role, what would have happened had Golan been in Syrian control during that period? That said, I still don't see the advantage, frankly, other than electoral politics, of making such a statement. And I think in the context of American credibility and the Kushner peace plan that's coming, it's going to undermine our credibility.
Given your extensive experience in peacemaking and the peace process in general, and given the current conditions on the ground, are you at all optimistic that some kind of Israeli-Palestinian negotiating process can be jump-started?
Hard to imagine, given the gaps that exist between Israelis and Palestinians on the six core issues that drive the conflict: border security, refugees, Jerusalem, recognition of Israel as the nation state of the Jews, and end of all conflict and claims. The gaps on these issues are enormous. The suspicion and mistrust between the two sides are enormous. And American credibility, in my judgment, has been fundamentally undermined by our seeming willingness to adopt a pro-Israeli point of view, as well as an anti-Palestinian campaign over the course of the last year and a half. I have no doubt that the U.S. needs to maintain its special relationship with the State of Israel if it's going to be an effective broker or facilitator of any sort of Israeli-Palestinian deal. But once that special relationship becomes exclusive, once we lose our independence of decision-making, our capacity to make and identify realistic ways to bridge gaps between the two parties, you might as well hang a close for the season sign on American policy. This isn't, frankly, primarily an American problem. When you strip it all away, the bottom line is that neither this Israeli government or this Israeli prime minister or the Palestinian Authority, which frankly looks more like Noah's Ark, where there's two of everything between Hamas and Fatah, are prepared, willing and or able to make the kinds of decisions necessary to create a negotiating environment or negotiation that would allow a third party, let's just say for the sake of argument, the United States, to bridge the gap. So the odds that this will result in a meaningful negotiating process, let alone a conflict-ending solution, chances of that happening are slim to none.
Mr. Aaron David Miller, thank you very much for being with me today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I'm Charles Biblezer, reporting for the Media Line.